Yo, what's good, everybody? What's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So we are back, week nine, right ahead of us. We're going into week nine. We are, I would say, at the halfway point of the NFL season. We got our, I would say, these past couple of weeks, and I kind of been talking about it and hinting at it, but these past couple of weeks, I feel like has been, you know, some separation has been made. We know we kind of have a, you know, a sense and idea of who are or what teams may be in the playoff hunt race. Some teams already have waved the white flag with the trade deadline that we'll get to. I talk about some of the more impactful and, you know, notable, bigger breaking news trades that went down during the trade deadline. But first and foremost, how's everybody doing out there? Shouts out to everyone that might be listening. As you guys all know, if you don't know, if you're a first-time listener, I am your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast. Everybody, shouts out to everybody that may be tuning in, listening. I don't know, you may be on your way to work. You may be listening to me while you take a nap. You may be listening to me while you eat some food. You may be listening to me while you be doing some homework. I don't know. Maybe you're at your desk and you're not supposed to be listening to me, but you are listening to me at this moment. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Greatly appreciate all the support, all the listeners, first time listeners, last time listeners, regular listeners. Greatly appreciate it. Continue to share this podcast with your friends and your enemies. Thank you guys. So, I'm gonna tackle obviously the NFL trade deadline and some moves that were made. I will give you guys my top 10 teams list. I realized I didn't, how could I? But I haven't given you guys my top 10 teams list in two weeks. I think it's 2 weeks now. This would be going on 2 weeks. It's completely revised. It is somewhat, I would say, new looking, but it consists of most of the teams. But in probably in some different orders, because my thoughts and feelings and opinions have kind of changed and altered over the past 2.5 weeks about certain football teams. So let's start with the trade deadline. Now, this trade deadline was not very crazy, right? I think we have, as someone that like kind of follows the NBA, the NFL, or covered the NFL and NBA, I think we have all, like the fans, like everybody, even opposing GMs, we've all kind of become accustomed to the aggressiveness of front offices, right? Like, we see crazy trades happen all the time. And even dating back to last year, or the last couple of years, where caliber of players like Christian McCaffrey or Von Miller have been traded. And it's like, these are like big-time, notable deals, right? Like, these are deals that essentially put teams over the top. The Rams, when they, the year they won the Super Bowl, they traded for Von Miller from the Broncos. They got him on a cheap deal, on a relatively good deal. They didn't have to pay his salary. And Von Miller was an integral part to that back end stretch that led to the Rams winning the Super Bowl. Christian McCaffrey, a lot of people was foaming out the mouth when the Niners had gave up what they had gave up to get Christian McCaffrey. I think with CMC, it was a good acquisition, but it was injury prone, running back. Who knows? 17 straight touchdowns later, you know, the deal works out, and Christian McCaffrey is one of the better players on the Niners. So That's typically how the trade deadline goes, but there was no crazy deal. And I have one big reason for that. And it's just simply they're going to be less likely to give up their valuable picks because of this loaded draft class we have coming this year. You know, teams' flexibility in terms of cap-wise situation, probably a little scarce. Like Kansas City, I know a lot of people was expecting Kansas City to make a move for like a receiver. I mean, yeah, knowing Brent Veach, yeah, like I'm sure they realize that they are kind of lacking that in that department, but they don't really have the cap space, right? They don't really have the remover, you know, too much in terms of the financial wiggle room. Yeah, but I think overall, teams, GMs around the league, mostly are like, okay, I think they were a little tight and less reluctant. They were a little reluctant to just give away picks for this upcoming draft because this is a really good, well, quarterback draft, obviously deep quarterback draft, deep offensive tackle draft, pretty good receiver draft. So, like, if you need offense or if your team is lacking in the skill positions, like, this is the draft to kind of, get that all settled up and patched up. But I'm going to start with this. I think the craziest move by far of the trade deadline was the Chicago Bears trading their second round pick for Montez Sweat. And I'm going to get to the Commanders too, because I saw a lot of like outcry and outbursts from Commanders fans. And I don't quite understand why. Like, I don't understand why. I'm going to get to that and I'm going to address the Commanders and the current situation. I don't know why, but I feel like there was just this outburst from Commanders fans because they traded to what we thought or what they probably thought were cornerstone pieces of their team. Cool. But the Chicago Bears, here's some reasons why, like, the Montez Sweat move just doesn't make sense. And it's, hey, Ryan Poles having another Ryan Poles type of day. And even if you are a diehard Chicago Bears fan, I don't know how you can just stand and support this type of transaction. Like, it's bad. So first, second round picks. I know some of you guys are like, well, they only gave up a second round pick. What makes a second round pick so important? Well, second round picks, and you guys can go do your homework, but second round picks can be powerful. And the reason for that is second round picks usually, especially early second rounders, like in the Bears, you're 2-6. Your Justin Fields is out. He's going to be out for numerous of weeks. You already stink. Like, so that second round pick is somewhat a quasi first rounder, depending on where you're picking at. And it looks like that Bears pick is going to be like 33, 34, 35, 36. Those are all like quasi first rounders. And like I said, you can go do your homework and look at throughout league history and look at where those players been drafted at. Those guys turned out to be pretty good. But the reason why that, like, the second round pick is so powerful is because you can draft impact starters for cheap wages, on cheap salaries, on cheap deals. Because even with those top 10, those top 5, those top 10 picks, the money is still expensive. Now, granted, you're gonna pick the guy that you want, right? But their salary is much more, it puts much more of a dent in your salary cap than a second rounder. And just for instance, I got a couple written down, like those 33rd, the 34th, the 35th picks, they turn out to be really good players. Point in case, Joey Porter Jr. Joey Porter Jr., so here's the funny part about it. The Bears did the same exact thing last year during the trade deadline, where they traded a second rounder, a quasi first rounder, to the Pittsburgh Steelers in exchange for Chase Claypool. If you ask the Bears, do you want to redo on that trade where you want Joey Porter Jr., who you could have side by side with Jalen Johnson, or do you want Chase Claypool, who was a walking red flag, and basically you cut him and you told him to stay away? I'm sure the Bears want to redo on that trade because that allowed Pittsburgh to draft Joey Porter Jr. Nick Chubb, one of the best before he got before his injury, obviously, he was off to a really good start to the season, and he's put together a really fine career. Second-round player. So a lot of the times when you're drafting, especially, like I said, high up in that second round, those are usually guys that are impact starters. They're plug-and-play dudes, and sometimes they turn out to be stars like Nick Chubb, and you got them on a relatively cheap deal. And that's the name of the game. That's the name of the game. Like, that's how you get good. You have young players, young good players on cheap deals. Like, that is how you do it. The Jets, up until this year, the Jets, they weren't paying anybody. They had young first, second, third-year players on their rookie contracts, and still do for some of these guys. The Lions, they're not like, they don't have like just max deals and all, like they don't have all of that. The Lions have a lot of young, cheap, inexpensive guys that they have drafted over the past 2-3 years. That's what they have. Like, that is how you get good. So with the Bears, you did it again this year. And granted, Chase Claypool, Montez Sweat is a better player than Chase Claypool. But Montez Sweat is not pushing the needle. Like, the Bears, you suck. You stink. You're ass. You're 2-6. What is Montez Sweat going to do? Is he even worth a win? Like, Sweat is a good player. But if you're the Bears, that pick 33, 34, 35, the way it's trending, if you wanted Montez Sweat that bad, you could have just waited until he hit the over market and overpaid for him. That's the funny part. He's on an expiring deal. And I know some people are like, well, Isaiah, the Bears now owe his rights. Okay, they own his rights to franchise tag him, which is also expensive. So, I don't get the, you wasted a highly valued pick on a player that you're going to, if you really, really want it that bad, you were going to have to overpay him anyway in free agency. But what good does he do for you this year? What is he going to do? Make a couple tackles and extra sacks? Okay. While you're getting your doors blown off by 21? Like, okay, cool. Sure. Sign him up. But I don't see the significance of this move. I don't see it. And like, think about it. If you're trying to buy something, you want to put down as little as possible. So like, if you're trying to put a down payment on a house, like you don't want to put 40%. You want to put 10%, maybe 15%, not 40%. Because guess what? That other money you have, you want to use that for other stuff, to buy other shit. And with the Bears, like I said, it just doesn't. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know how you can support this where you gave up. Like I said, the trend, the history of this league, those highly drafted second round picks turned out to be really good players. T. Higgins, another guy, drafted at 33. Bengals, that's a quasi first rounder, but instead, he's a second rounder, and you get him on a second round type of contract. And when teams put themselves in these type of predicaments where they give up picks for these players and these players on expiring contracts, the agent and the player now have the team by the balls. Like, that's just like, I mean, like the agent has all of the leverage. And usually, you know, when you see a big time trade go down, like when the Dolphins traded for Tyreek Hill, the whole thing was, hey, we're giving up this X amount of picks, and with it's already kind of known that we're going to give him a long-term deal. You know, same thing when Jalen Ramsey got traded to the Rams. The Rams knew they were going to have to give Jalen Ramsey a 5-year contract extension. Like, the Broncos knew in trading for Russell Wilson, he wanted a new deal. He wanted an extension. They gave it to him. That's usually how it works. But with the Bears, just like, I like, okay, you got Montez Sweat, and he's a, like I said, he's a good player, not an all pro kind of guy, but a really good player. But you couldn't just overpay. You couldn't wait to overpay him in offseason. Instead, you just had to trade up. You had to trade a valuable pick in order just to pay him. Like, it just makes no sense. And last year, they traded, like, some of these, I think a lot of this is, like, mismanagement and team mismanagement. Because I'm looking at it like, last year, they traded away Roquan Smith, and he makes $20 million. Meanwhile, Edmonds, he makes $18 million. The Bears are paying him $18 million. But the gap between those two players is kind of like night and day. Roquan Smith is night and day better than Edmonds, but they're paying them very similarly. So, like, you have no problem paying a linebacker. Why not just pay the better linebacker? I just can't fathom. Like, I don't know. This team is terrible in terms of management. And Ryan Poles, as much credit as a lot of people give him for the DJ Moore trade, which turns out to be pretty good, with the Chase Claypool trade and now this trade, those trades are so bad that it kind of like balances it out, and it kind of like cancels out that DJ Moore trade. So I like that's such a bad move to me. That's just such a bad move to me. I feel like that's roster mismanagement. And like I said, GMs, my feeling was a lot of front offices were less likely to, you know, trade their picks this year because of the upcoming draft, right? You know, and with the Bears, your team stinks. So any player that you draft with your first couple of picks, they're probably going to play, especially in a loaded draft. They're probably going to play because your team sucks. I don't get it. Like I said, Ryan Poles strikes again. I have a list of like just bad moves that the Bears have made. And I, like I said, you can be the most realist, the most diehard Chicago Bears fan. I do not know how you support a move like this Montez Sweat move. And it's nothing against him because he's going to probably get paid. But the Bears, Ryan Poles, giving up a second rounder for a guy that you just could have gotten in the offseason and overpaid for him, it just makes no sense. It's total roster mismanagement, mismanagement of certain assets. That is why the Bears are the Bears, and that's why they're in the predicament that they're in right now. I don't know how you can support that. So the other Commanders defensive end that got traded was Chase Young. He got traded to the 49ers for a third rounder. And I've been like, when the trades went down, I saw this like complete uproar from Commanders fans. And I thought it was funny. But then I'm like, yeah, I mean, the Commanders, the team, the franchise is waving the white flag this year. They're 3-5. This draft is loaded. Your coach is probably going to be fired. I mean, I don't know what more you want from this franchise. Granted, I know it's been bad, and I know the fan base has kind of been wanting more. But this year, it's not happening. 3-5, you're not going to win your division. You're not even going to be second in your division. You're probably not a play. Like, you're not a player. Like, you're like, why hold on to these guys? Montez Sweat is good player, like a B, kind of like a B player, but you wanna give him $20+ million on a yearly basis? Probably not. Not when you are in this predicament, or it seems like they have been in this stalemate. And that's what that's what I would describe the Commanders. You know how certain teams are just bad, like Chicago, they're bad. And like I said, hey, Washington, you just fleeced Chicago for a really good second round pick. So like, that's nothing to be down on. That 49ers pick may not be that flashy, but who cares? You got a third rounder. But with Chicago, like, they're bad. Like the Bears are bad. The Panthers are bad, right? The Raiders are bad. But when I look at this Commanders team, and I've been kind of hinting at this over the past couple of years, when you turn on their game, they have talented guys throughout, like throughout spots. Like obviously, the identity of their team over the past few years has been their defensive line, their physical defensive line, the play they get from those guys. All of those guys are really talented. All of those guys are really talented. As I mentioned, Cam Curl, he's a really productive safety, one of the more productive safeties we have in the league. He's probably going to get extended this offseason. They got some nice receivers on the outside. They got a running back that I really like. I think the tight end, Logan Thomas, is pretty interesting. Brian Robinson. They got some nice standout pieces. But for whatever reason, whether it's the head coaching, whether it's the quarterback play, that's kind of been some everywhere. Like, they just haven't found that guy at the quarterback. It's been like a complete sabbatical at the quarterback spot, or trying to find someone at the quarterback spot since Kirk Cousins have left, right? And offensively, like, they just sometimes leave a lot to be desired, right? That's just what it is. Like, they have always stayed around. Like, the Commanders, they're not bad, but they're not good enough to make the playoffs and win a playoff. Like, they haven't been that good. Like, they range around, they float around that 7-8 win territory. And with this division, you're in a division with a couple of big boys. You know, Philly is as talented as anyone. Kind of ironic that, you know, the Commanders, they play Philly really hard, but they just sometimes can't pull it out and finish the game. But Philly is a big boy. Dallas, they win 12 games on a yearly basis. Say what you want about Dallas, but they have won 12 games back-to-back years, and it looks like they're going to probably win 11, 12 games this year. Like, so you're in a division with some big boys now.
Ownership recognizes it, and like I said, it's new ownership. So with new ownership, it comes with there's no like vested interest in Ron Rivera. There's no invested interest in Eric Bieniemy. And I mean, this team it's just been a stalemate. It's not a horrible team, but I don't get why fans are in uprage, because the team is waving the white flag. You're not like a player away. You're a couple pieces away. Keeping expiring deals like Montez Sweat, Chase Young. With Chase Young, you was gonna probably give him a prove it kind of deal, right? This is kind of his prove it year. He's having a decent year. Sweat, he's gonna probably make every bit of $20 million, and the Bears are gonna overpay for him. You're not in that predicament as a football team to give out expensive deals to, at this point, B players. Call it what it is. They're B players. And my expectation, Ron Rivera will probably be gone next year. Everybody was banging on the table for Eric Bieniemy to get a head coaching job, but he took the offense coordinator job in Washington. And not to say he's doing a bad job, but he throws the football entirely too much. He throws the football. You got it. Like, come on, we got to switch it up. Throws the football entirely too much. And it's part of the reason why Sam Howell is on pace to break David Carr's sack rate. But then I look at Sam Howell, and the funny part about it is, when he came out of UNC, my comp for Sam Howell was Baker Mayfield. I thought they were similarly built. A lot of the same traits, not a big arm, good enough arm, right? Sometimes he can make some throws down the field, whatever. But I thought he was very comparable to Baker Mayfield. And Sam Howell, it's not the answer, right? Like, he's not the guy. He's not the guy. I think we all should know that now, going into what? We're in week 9. He's not the guy. I think EB, like I said, they've thrown the ball a lot. And I think even for a guy like Sam Howell, you shouldn't want to throw the football 40, 45 times with Sam Howell on a weekly basis, right? But I thought he was very comparable to Baker Mayfield. Ironically, guys like this, because Baker's a backup, And Sam Howell, he looks to be at, like, a backup, right? And guys like this, they're you can go a stretch with them as their quarter as your quarterback, but to go like a whole 17, 18 week season with these guys as your quarterbacks week in, week out, it's a tall task to ask for those guys to deliver for you on a consistent basis. So this Commanders team, I'm not mad at ownership. I get it. Fans need to understand it, that like, hey, your team is at a stalemate, and it's been like this for a few years, and you got to sometimes rip the Band-Aid off. So, yeah, that's my take on Washington and what I thought they did in this trade deadline. Let's move on. I want to move on to the Raiders because I mentioned the Raiders, and they got it's just a whole bunch of news swirling around. First, they fired Josh McDaniels. Thank God. Mark Davis found the wherewithal and the money to fire Josh McDaniels. Second of all, they should have traded Davante Adams, right? Like, I feel like they missed the opportunity to trade Davante Adams. Like, you could have got perhaps a first round pick for Davante Adams at this point. And with the Raiders, it's funny because they have two really, really elite players at their positions in Davante Adams and Max Crosby. And can you name, and he's so good, but can you name 10 players who are more dominant and just like that just shows more effort than Max Crosby on a week out, weekend basis? Like, he is really good. And with Max, at least with Max Crosby, he's an edge rusher. So no coach or no other quarterback, like no other player can like hold him back, like, or could like, you know, regress his, like, it's one-on-one, you versus the tackle, line up each and every down. And he can get to the quarterback. He can stop the run. Like, nothing is stopping him. No coach, no player is stopping him, right? But with Davante Adams, he plays a dependent position. And that's the thing with Crosby. He doesn't play a position that is dependent on someone else. But with Davante Adams, he can run the best go routes. He can run the best drag, the best in routes, the best out routes. And if he can be open, but if Jimmy Garoppolo can't hit him, it's pointless. It's pointless. Jimmy Garoppolo, at this point, he's playing the worst football of his career. And Garoppolo, he looks shot. He couldn't hit water if he was in the middle of the ocean. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's looked really, really bad over these past couple of weeks. So I thought the Raiders blew an opportunity to trade Davante Adams. And granted, the other half is like, okay, part of me feels bad for Davante Adams, but the other side is like, he literally chose the Raiders. Like, he chose to be traded to the Raiders, and I know he wanted to play with Derek Carr, wanted to play with his buddy. He grew up near the area. Well, not the Oakland. He grew up in the Oakland area, not Vegas. But you get the gist. Like, he grew up in the area, but he was currently, before he left Green Bay, and even after, like, his first year as a Raider, he was really productive. They just weren't good. But even last, like, this dude is currently in his prime, and you don't know how long, like, especially for a receiver, you don't know how long this prime is going to last. It is not going to last for 10 years. Like, it probably won't even last. He probably won't be able to play at this level for the next, like, five more. Like, he won't be able to do it, probably. So, every year wasted, it kind of sucks for Davante. But this is what he kind of chose. And with the firing of Josh McDaniels, Josh McDaniels, I was never, never a huge Josh McDaniels guy. And I, an avid listener was trying to convince me his first year in Vegas. They were trying to convince me that Josh McDaniels had turned the corner, and I would have to go back and forth. And I'm like, Josh McDaniels, up until this point, we have not seen anything that has shown us that he is an adequate coach. Like, he can't coach himself out of a wet paper bag. Like, nothing. He has shown no evidence that he's an adequate coach. And that was like year one into the Raiders job. But I must say, and I don't think this is hyperbole. I don't even think this is a reach. Josh McDaniels is one of the worst coaches in NFL history. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think that's me being caught in the moment. I don't think that's a reach. Get this. He's the first coach in the Super Bowl era to coach for two different teams and not make it through the second season twice. Like, and with McDaniels, we look at his offensive coordinator, like we look at his resume in New England, and it's like, this guy should be a good fit. No, this is the second time that he's been fired, and he couldn't even make it through the second season in both of his stints. In Denver, he treated everybody like he treated everybody like an asshole, right? Like, he kind of bought, and that's the thing I always kind of talk about with the Belichick tree. And also, on the Belichick tree, the coaching tree, is an absolute embarrassment. It is an absolute embarrassment. Between Josh McDaniels, Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, and even Brian Flores. I get to that. But in Denver, he was, like, he treated everybody poorly. Poorly. And, like, I don't like it when Belichick is all grumpy and, like, so standoffish and so, like, just up here. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. But then it's like a trickle-down effect to his assistants and coordinators, where Matt Patricia kind of had this same look. Like, Matt Patricia didn't even look like a coach. He did not look like a coach. Josh McDaniels, they kind of have this air about themselves. And it's like, bro, like let's bring it down a notch. Let's bring it down a notch. And then with this, doing his Raiders stint, it like I said, he just looked like he was over his head each and every week. And the thing about, one of the problems about being a bad team, you can be a bad team and it kind of just gets overlooked, right? Like with the Panthers, they're bad. They're not good. But they're not playing primetime games. With the Raiders, it feels like they've been on two Monday night games, a Sunday night. Like, with the Raiders' problems and how bad they are, with them being a bad team, and you're the Raiders, you get a lot of primetime games. So those issues just become magnified because everyone is watching. Everyone is watching. But back to the Belichick tree, coaching tree. The Belichick coaching tree is an absolute embarrassment. Like, embarrassment. Over the past few years, I have talked about how bad the Belichick coaching tree, and I've kind of came up with some reasons as to why I think it has not been successful. But the point is, these guys are, like, most of these guys aren't great. And the funny thing is, Out of all of the coordinators and the assistants that have come from New England and got a head coaching job, you know who the best coaching candidate coming out of New England is? It's Josh McDaniels. He has the best, like, he probably has the best resume out of all of the coaching candidates in the Belichick coaching tree. That's the crazy part about it. But, and I will say this for Flores, with Brian Flores. It seemed like he was going to be the needle in the haystack, where he was like, oh, like for a hot New York minute, it looked as if Brian Flores may be the one guy who won't fall into this whole Belichick tree and he actually pan out and work. Well, no, he didn't. Because ultimately, he didn't know how to value the quarterback spot, and he didn't give a damn about offense. And I hate to say it, I love defense. Defense still wins you championships. Defense travels, but damn it, the quarterback is the lifeline of the sport right now. And offensively in 2023, you cannot be tone deaf. Like, you gotta be, like, off, like, you can't just put offense on the back burner and not value the quarterback spot. If you're doing that as a coach, sorry, you can't be my coach in 2023. You just can't. You just can't. I can't. Like, you have to be, ultimately, he didn't value the quarterback spot because the Dolphins were the owner trying to tank for Joe Burrow. I don't like the way he went about it, but I get the gist. And even that, they ended up with Tua, but he didn't wrap his arms around Tua. And point blank, he just didn't care enough about offense. And that's just, like, in 2023, that's not going to work. Matt Patricia was over his head, like, completely over his head in Detroit. Joe Judge, he was a laughing stock. He got laughed out of New York. But this Raiders team was progressively getting worse by the week with Josh McDaniels at the helm. Progressively getting worse. So I'm glad that Mark Davis was able to rip the Band-Aid off and say, hey, we gotta move off this guy. We gotta start off something fresh. We need new air. We need a new voice in the room because it is not working. And for Josh McDaniels, it's kind of embarrassing. This is your second job, and for the second time, you couldn't even make it through two full years. Like that's crazy. That's crazy to me. And that's why I say, like, he's a big disappointment because you look at all of those coordinators and the assistants in New England. He by far, I'm not gonna say by far, but he has, I would say, the most impressive resume. He should be paying, like, literally, I'm not even being, like, joking. Like, Josh McDaniels should be paying Brady some royalties or something. Because you remove Brady and his offense just doesn't look functional. Like, it just does not function nearly the same. It's just not effective at all. Anytime you can't get Devontae Adams the football, it's just like, come on. Like, come on. I thought the Raiders, coming into the year, I thought their biggest issue would be their defense. Because I'm looking at McDaniels, I'm looking at, you know, Devontae Adams, Josh Jacobs. You got some weapons on the offensive end. It's no way that the Raiders offensively should look the way they look when they have the caliber talent at certain spots that they do. It's just no way. But, you know, like I said, the Belichick coaching tree is an embarrassment. Josh McDaniels is one of the worst coaches in NFL history, and that's not hyperbole. I'll catch you guys at this quick break. So we got another big week coming up. Week 9. Week 9 is going to be really, really interesting. And before I get into my top 10 teams really quickly, I wanted to go over some of the matchups that we're going to be getting in week 9 that I think is, like, big for the quarterback, big for the coach, big for the team. I think all of these teams that are playing in the games that I'm about to talk about, all of these teams will probably be playoff teams, probably. So let's get into it. First game I want to talk about is Dolphins Chiefs. And Mahomes, Andy Reid, they're coming off their first. Mahomes is coming off his first divisional away loss. He's never lost an away divisional game, or I should say, he's never lost an away game to a divisional opponent. That happened for the first time last Sunday versus the Broncos, and it was a tough one. It was a tough one. The Chiefs didn't make any moves on the trade deadline, and they're playing the Dolphins. They're playing the Dolphins, where, you know, I've kind of talked about it over the past couple of weeks with the Dolphins. They continually dominate. They're in, like, the opponents that's inferior, like, they win the games they're supposed to, but they have thus far this year have played two big time games versus two, I would say, elite teams or teams we look at may not, like, Bills may not be elite, but we look at those teams as like, okay, Dolphins, let's see what they look like in this game, or let's see what they look like in this game. And the Bills, they got completely hammered, completely handled by the Bills. And then they played the Eagles. That game was a little bit closer, but Philly physically dominated Miami, especially in that second half. So that's two matchups where we kind of had circled for Miami, because granted, you know, I think they're really interesting and fun to watch when they beat up on the Patriots and they beat up on the Giants and they beat up on these other teams that they have played against this year. They put up 70 on the Broncos. But here you go. This is another one of those games where it's like a prove it game. Like, okay, if the Dolphins want to be taken seriously, if people are going to take the Dolphins seriously as a playoff contender, Super Bowl contender, a team that can win multiple playoff games, you got to win games like this. Or you got to play Kansas City really, really tough, right? So Miami, they got Jalen Ramsey back. You know, he should be a factor. But I'm sure that Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Chiefs will be ready. After that division loss, that was a stinker. The Chiefs hadn't lost to the Broncos since Peyton Manning was playing quarterback. So that was a tough loss and a tough pill for Kansas City to swallow. So I'm sure they'll be ready. But this is another prove it game for the Dolphins. And, you know, can we take them seriously? And here's the opportunity. Cowboys, Eagles, kind of similar predicament where Dallas, and the thing about Dallas that I think is really interesting, they continuously have these moments or these games where they just crush people. Like, they crush people. Like, when they start scoring defensive touchdowns and special teams touchdowns, they get block punts. They got dudes that you don't even know the name. Like, the dudes are scoring. You don't even know their name. You look up, they're like, whoa, this guy has a touchdown? Like, Deron Bland, he has 3 touchdowns in the season. He has just as many touchdowns as Devontae Smith this year. Like, Deron Brown has just as many touchdowns as a lot of notable receivers this year. So he's a pick six machine. And when Dallas gets on top of you, it's wraps. They put the nail in the hammer, in the coffin, I should say. But Philly, we kind of know when Dallas, these games versus, you know, the Eagles, the 49ers, they don't play out that way. You don't just get block punts. You don't get, you know, special team blunders. No. It doesn't happen like that. Those games aren't played like that. And I think for Dallas, I kind of remember their win versus the Chargers on Monday night a few weeks back. And I thought that was Dak's best game he played up until that point. He's been playing really well over these last few weeks. But I think up until that point, that was the best game he played. And they're going to need, in order for Dallas, and this is kind of like for this week, this is for the playoffs. In order for Dallas to make some noise and to beat a team like the Eagles, Dak is going to have to be a playmaker. I'm sorry. Like, the defense is going to come to play, but Dak is going to have to make some plays. And I can remember versus in that Chargers game when things were kind of tight, and I would say the coaching wasn't great. Mike McCarthy and the play calling was not great. When Dak was able to play make and he got out the pocket, threw the ball to Tony Pollard, that was a big, like, 50-yard gain, I think. I can remember in the red zone, him backpedaling, throwing the touchdown to Brandon Cooks. They're going to need moments like that from Dak in order to take down a team like the Eagles. Because, let's be honest, Philly, let's just weigh the odds. If Philly lose this game, no one, like, okay, we're maybe looking at Jalen Hurts and his injury. You know, we'll probably have some question marks. We probably have some question marks about their offense or whatever, right? That's the most. But we know Philly. They were close minutes, plays probably away from winning the Super Bowl. They're the most talented team in the league, right? I don't think no one is second guessing about Philly. If Dallas lose this game, a lot of people are just out. The stock is already kind of low on Dallas, but a lot of people just be out. A lot of people just be out, and there is a clear separate, like there's a clear distinct and disparity between the Eagles, the 49ers, and then there's Dallas. And hell, some people might even say Detroit's better than Dallas, right? I will say for Dallas, and also for Mike McCarthy, I don't want to make this whole thing about Dak, but for Mike McCarthy, when was the last time you looked up and you was like, man, Mike McCarthy really, really outdid himself? Like, like this is a big win for Mike McCarthy. When was the last time you can say that? Like, damn, Mike McCarthy got a good win. I don't know. I can't remember the last time I watched a Cowboy game and I looked and I said, man, Mike McCarthy, he kind of outdid himself today. He did a really good job. I can't remember the last time I said that. Kind of feels like Mike McCarthy needs one of those wins. Kind of feels like it. So if Dallas wins this game, you're in position. You put yourself in good position to win the division. Or I should say compete for the division for the latter part of the year. And then also, people will probably take you seriously. Halfway seriously, at least. And then the last game, Cincinnati-Buffalo. And I can remember that Buffalo game, that Cincinnati and Buffalo playoff divisional game last year. It was an absolute ass-whooping. The Chiefs went into Buffalo, and they physically had their way with Buffalo. I think they ran for 172 yards. Buffalo just couldn't. That game was not close. Like, that game was not close at all. So once again, this is kind of a big game for both teams because Cincinnati, they got off to a really, really slow start. So they can't afford too many L's, you know, coming down the stretch this year. They can't really afford that many L's. But this is a big game for them too. But this is also a big game for Josh Allen and the Bills. They kind of been sputtering out of control over the past couple of weeks. I know they have some key defensive holes, right, due to injury. Them losing Matt Milano, them losing Trey White, like, They got some pieces that they are missing on the defensive side of the football. But sometimes when you got a guy like Josh Allen, you need him to play one of his better games. Like especially when it's against, you know, Joe Burrow, it's Patrick Mahomes. Like a lot of people, obviously Patrick Mahomes is the best player in football, best quarterback in football. But a lot of people have Joe Burrow, including myself. I have Joe Burrow over Josh Allen. So Josh Allen, you know, this is the time where if he can play one of his better games and help propel his team to victory. But this is a big game. This is a big weekend. These are some potential divisional matchups, perhaps. But this is a big, big weekend, kind of prove it weekend for the Dolphins and Dallas. For that Cincinnati and Buffalo game, kind of the battle of the two quarterbacks where, you know, Josh Allen has to overcome some injuries and so forth. But also, Joe Burrow, Cincinnati, they're hot, but they can't afford too many L's coming down the stretch of the year with them trying to make a playoff push. So that'll be it. I'm going to go into my top 10 teams. My top 10 teams going into week 9. All right, so last but not least, I have my top 10 teams going into week 9. And like I said, it's a little bit different. I haven't done my top 10 teams in a couple of weeks, oddly enough. But I got a solid 10, I feel like. Hasn't changed too much, probably a little flipped with some of the teams. But here we go. At 10, I got the Seahawks. Surprisingly, the Seahawks, for years, they have struggled with one of these things, but they finally have a pass rush. Seahawks are top four in sacks in the league. They finally have found their running game over the past couple, I think over the past four games, they have rushed the ball for over 100 yards. So they kind of, like Seattle this year especially, they feel like a Pete Carroll-led team with the defensive line play, being able to get to the quarterback and also control the time possession and run the football. I like Seattle. I don't know what their ceiling is. I kind of struggled to find out or figure out what their ceiling is, especially with Geno at quarterback. Not to say that he's bad, but I just don't know what their ceiling is. I got to see them more. So I got the Seahawks at 9 or at 10. At 9, I have the Dolphins. Like I said, I like the Dolphins. I think they're really, really exciting to watch. Tyreek Hill is like, he is literally cementing himself as one of the all-time greats right now, currently. Mike McDaniel, great innovative play caller. Similar to Seattle, I struggle to see their ceiling. I want to see them versus Kansas City this upcoming week, as I've already mentioned. In their bigger games this year, they have not played up to par. I worry about the. I want to see how their offense continues to travel and how their offense continues to produce this as the weather gets colder. So we'll see. Dolphins at 9. At 8, I have the Lions. They're really young. They're feisty. They have big playability, but also they can control the line of scrimmage and win the old school way. I like the Lions because they have a multitude of ways to win. Now, that Ravens game, they got punched in the mouth, and it seemed like they weren't even there. But I like this Lions team. I got them at 8. At 7, I have the Cowboys. I feel like they might be a better version of Buffalo. They like to blow teams out. Once they get on top of teams, they get on top of you. They lead the league in defensive touchdowns with 4, I think, and that's all without Trayvon Diggs. Trayvon Diggs has been hurt for a minute now. So with the Cowboys, similar to Miami, I want to see them beat a team like Philly or 49. Like, I want to see them beat that caliber team. We'll see what happens this upcoming weekend. Cowboys at 7. At 6, I got the 49ers. They've been kind of spiraling out of control. Their defense hasn't looked great at all. Granted, I would say this. They were a field goal away from beating Cleveland, and Purdy didn't necessarily play bad in that Minnesota game. That was still a winnable game. So these games have been winnable for the 49ers. They got completely curve stomped that this past week versus the Bengals. But their defense continues to be an issue. But I think this Niner team, they'll find their way eventually. So I got them at 6. At 5, I got Cincinnati. Who knew? Who knew Cincinnati in these last couple of weeks will, you know, turn it up and get back to their regular selves? But Joe Burrow's playing at an awesome level right now. When Joe Burrow plays like that, like the way he played last week, he kind of puts us on notice. Like, hold on, like, hey, I think Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. But when Burrow plays like that, he's trying to insert himself into that argument, into that tier, and he looks really damn good. They got a big game coming up versus the Bills. I'm excited to see that. I got Cincinnati at 5. At 4, I got the Jaguars. Over the past 4 games, they have held their opponents to 20 points or less. So their defense is a little bit stouter than usual. They're a Florida team, but they went into Pittsburgh in very Pittsburgh-like weather, and they beat Pittsburgh at their own game. So they're not like your average, typical Florida team. They are really physical. They can win in a slugfest, but they also have some explosiveness offensively. I like Trevor Lawrence a lot. Last 4 games, QBR, or his passing rate, I should say, has been 100 or more over the past 4 games. So he's finding his groove. Travis Etienne was one of, like, Travis Etienne is a steal. He's become one of the best multi-purpose, kind of just overall best running backs in the league in terms of, like, the running ability and then also his pass catching ability. really, really good, solid pickup for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Love how they're utilizing him. I got the Jags at 4. I like them a lot, but I don't think they'll beat Kansas City. Granted, Kansas City is not looking the way I expected or I intend for them to look in these next coming weeks going into the playoffs, but I like Kansas City a lot. I feel like they're missing some type of offensive firepower on the outside, but I got the Chiefs at 3. At 2, I got the Eagles. The Eagles, they're probably the most talented team in football. You look at from the position, they really don't have any holes. I don't know if they have played a complete game yet. I don't know if you ask me what's the Eagles' best performance. I don't know if I can pick it, but they continue to win. They got a big divisional game coming up versus the Cowboys. We'll see how they fare. Eagles at 2. And at number 1, I have the Baltimore Ravens. Yes, I have the Baltimore Ravens at number 1. Over the past couple of weeks, they have looked like the best team in the league. They handled Detroit. Wasn't even close. The game was over before Detroit even got off the bus. Baltimore looks really good. I thought coming into year, they were like a 10 win team maybe. Now I'm asking myself, is Baltimore a 13, 14 win team? Like, they look really damn good. Ravens at 1, headed into week 9. That will conclude this pod. Hope you guys enjoyed. I'll be back later next week. You guys will hear my voice, and we'll break down week 9. Always remember, 2 choices, 1 decision. Peace, deuces, I'm out.